Hey everyone, welcome back to another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshall, coming to you from TCO Studios at Winter Park. Back at you after a week away, last week, away from the Wobcast, not away from work. We were in California capturing awesome content that you will eventually see. We went to NFL Network, we went to UCLA, we went to UCLA's Pro Day, we went to Fox Studios, we went to Irvine to see Kyle Rudolph. It was a great trip. We captured a bunch of great content. Some of it's already been posted on Vikings.com, and much more of it will be posted in the coming days and weeks. So that's why we didn't have an episode of the Wobcast last week, but we do have one this week. You're listening to it right now. I'm going to introduce producer Nate Vaughn, who's here, who was also in California on the trip. Nate, we had a blast in California, got a lot of cool stuff. Any takeaways for you that you want to give to the listeners from our trip?
Well, first off, I want to come off on the defensive front.
Okay.
Don't accuse us of escaping the cold Minnesotan spring that we've had basically up until the last two or 3 days, because it was, in fact, chilly and rainy.
Most
for two-thirds of the time that we were there in L.A. So
we went to the beach.
I don't want to hear it.
But we didn't touch the sand.
Did not touch the sand.
We walked out onto the pier.
Did not touch the water.
Almost got blown off the pier by the wind.
Yeah.
So we're not asking you to strum up the violins and be sad for us, but it's not like we went, you know, to sunny California to chill by the beach. We were working.
It was a business trip.
It was a business trip indeed. And we got a lot of great stuff, and we hope that you guys are going to enjoy it. But we're back now. And we'll be back with you with at least one Wobcast every week leading up to the draft for as long as they let Nate and I continue to do this at least. Because we have lots to get to. And we have lots to get to in this show. Today we're going to hear from head coach Mike Zimmer on the Wobcast. We're going to unveil a new weekly feature leading up to the draft. We'll get to some fan mail. But first, the owners' meetings happened this past week in Arizona. I think, Nate, the biggest thing for me anyway that came from these meetings, and there were a lot of things that came from these meetings, which happens every year, including some rules changes, which we'll get to in a minute. But the biggest thing in my mind is the Raiders moving to Las Vegas by way of a 31-1 vote in favor of the Oakland Raiders eventually moving to be the Las Vegas Raiders. The Vikings aren't scheduled to play a regular season game at the Raiders until 2023, but they could, of course, play a preseason game in Oakland. All of that aside, soon, Nate, it will be the Las Vegas Raiders, kind of a landmark day in the NFL as they go to Las Vegas.
Especially if you group it with the move to Los Angeles for the Rams and, as of this offseason, the Chargers.
Yes.
So lots of movement in the NFL all of a sudden.
You're right. Three teams have moved in the last 14 months, I guess we could say. And I think you kind of put like the stadium issue that certain cities have and franchise relocation, they're kind of in the same bucket. They're oftentimes related. And I think with these three teams moving and thus getting new stadium situations, I think that's kind of the end of an era of stadium issues for franchises. I think if you count renovations and new buildings, basically everyone's pretty good right now, I think. The Vikings got theirs. The Rams and Chargers have theirs. The Raiders are going to have theirs. Atlanta's opens next year. The Cowboys recently got a new one. I mean, I think we're doing pretty well for new stadiums, which kind of begs the questions. What is next on the stadium front? And the Falcons opened the Mercedes-Benz Dome, I believe, in 2017. I think that's what it's called. In a few years, the Rams and Chargers will be in their LA stadium. Same with the Raiders in Las Vegas. Miami, Kansas City, and Green Bay, I can think of as recently renovated buildings. So I think if you're looking at like who's going to have a new stadium next, how about the Redskins? Maybe FedEx Field is not bad, but it's been up for a while.
Yeah.
The Bengals maybe could have a new. We were there last year.
Didn't seem that bad.
It's not terrible, but it's not like, you know, new.
Right, right. Yeah, and we're looking through purple-shaded glasses now, too.
We are.
Because we're spoiled with our new stadium.
We are.
So it's a lot easier to say, oh, these guys, they need to take care of some of this stuff.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and you should build these things to be able to last. I mean,
yeah,
for a lot of reasons, including cost, especially if public financing is going to be involved. But I think to the Buffalo and Jacksonville, you know, what are their futures in their cities? And hopefully, especially in the case of of Buffalo, hopefully their future there is solid because that city is, you know, deeply ingrained in NFL and AFL history. So hopefully they're good there. But anyway, kind of a new era in the NFL in terms of franchises, their locations, and stadiums. And the Vikings got their new building at the tail end of that era, and we love it. And it's US Bank Stadium, and we can't wait to keep playing our home games there. Other things from the owners' meetings, rule changes. Two that I want to talk about, Nate. Eliminating the leaping play to block field goals and point after touchdowns, extra points. The language from this, the rule will prohibit players from running forward and leaping over a long snapper to block a field goal or extra point. The reason that they tagged here is player safety. So, do you understand it?
I do.
Yeah.
I have a follow-up question right away.
Yes.
The running forward. So if someone can just, as they say, has mad hops,
right,
they can just stand there and jump over?
Ooh, a loophole.
Without running forward?
A loophole. It says running forward.
They need to invite me to these.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were a lawyer in your spare time. this rule to me makes sense for two reasons. One, the player safety thing, totally get it. One is, for on the player safety topic, one thing is the long snapper. You try and jump over the long snapper, but you don't quite make it, or you're a little too low, and your foot or leg hits the long snapper in the head. That's a problem.
For both of you.
That's where I'm going next. Oh. Now for the leaper who gets upended, and he could land on his head or back or arm or whatever. So from a player safety standpoint, totally get it. Also, we've made it illegal to touch the long snapper anyway. It was illegal to touch the long snapper before this rule was passed. You can't touch the long snapper because he's in a vulnerable position. And so why are we going to make it okay to leap over the long snapper if we can't touch him? Like, we're making this area basically a protected area.
If the danger is still
right.
The same.
So it makes total sense that this is passed. This is, and I know I can hear some people right now as they're listening to us, oh, another exciting play taken out away from the game. If you look at all the blocked field goals and extra points in the last couple of years, only a handful were done with this technique, leaping over the center. So it's not like you're taking away a play that happens every week.
And it is, well, the exciting part of it is you don't like expect it. It just happens, and then you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That was crazy, and it's exciting because you don't see it often, and now you won't ever see it again.
So, I think the few times where it happened and worked are not worth the danger that exists, and getting rid of it, the amount of safety that you are adding and the increase in safety is worth what you're taking away in terms of exciting plays. So, good job there by the by everyone involved, the owners who voted, and the competition committee. The second one that I want to talk about is the central command for replay reviews. The rule states, replace a sideline replay monitor, so basically the hood, the ref no longer will go under the hood. Replacing the hood with a handheld device, a tablet, and allow designated members of the officiating department, who are located in New York City on game days, to make the final decision from a centralized location. So basically, this is Dean Blandino and his crew at the NFL Command Center watching games, talking to referees on the field about a play that's being reviewed, and Blandino can chime in and say, this is how you should call this based on the rules, because he's got the rules literally at his fingertips, and he's got the technology at his fingertips. I really like this. I think this will streamline review, and it will increase its accuracy.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, and the biggest thing you said is streamline. If the referees on the field need to review it, that they have to make the call, they have to decide whether they're going to review it or not, or the coach has to challenge, or whatever the case, they have to walk off the field over to to the replay booth, watch, come back, make the announcement. Whereas if the NFL is already watching this, they see a play that could be reviewed, they start going through that process right away.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already thinking in that way, and can't help but think it's just going to streamline things a little bit.
Exactly. It will. And I think it'll increase the accuracy too, with Blandino being able to chime in and make the call. So there were several other changes to the rules and bylaws that passed, and there were some that did not pass. So if you want all that information, we have it for you on Vikings.com. go to Vikings.com and find the article about the rules changes. It's written by Craig Peters. He details all of it. You can get that information there on the website.
There's usually a few fairly entertaining rules that don't pass too. So
definitely. And there were in this case as well. So go check that out. It's good information for you guys to know. Also at the owners' meetings, head coach Mike Zimmer had a breakfast with reporters, as every AFC and NFC head coach does. The AFC coaches on one day, the NFC coaches on the other. They sit at a table, reporters sit down with the coach they want to visit with, and they ask him a bunch of questions. Mike Zimmer did it for about an hour. The entire video is on Vikings.com right now, so you can go watch it and listen to it. But Nate and I picked out four clips that are our favorites from the conversation Coach Zimmer had with the media. We're going to go over them right now. The first one is Coach Zimmer talking about the Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers signings.
With both those two guys, I think we've improved at the two tackle spots, number one. They're both guys that are really tough guys, really smart guys, and they play like veterans, so they'll change up their sets, they'll change up their hands, they change up, you know, so they're not getting the same thing every time, and the defensive linemen don't get in a rhythm with them. So I think that's probably that, and you know, I think they're probably better run blockers than they are pass protectors. But we had in our pass protection last year, we had a lot of quick misses. You know, guys would get beat quick and then get the quarterback hit. These guys are going to fight and make it tougher for them to get around all day. I'm not saying the other guys weren't fighters. I'm just saying they're going to change up their techniques. They're not going to give the guys the same thing every time. Extremely. And, you know, this draft is not the best draft for tackles. So we felt like it was important that we signed two offensive linemen.
The takeaways for me from there, Nate, he says that these two guys play like veterans, meaning they change their sets and their hand technique so they are less predictable blockers for pass rushers to go against. I thought that was an interesting observation and one that we don't often think about. In fact, we had Pete Bursich in studio this week breaking down film of Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers. And as astute as Pete is and as many things as he touched on, he never talked about that part of it. So I thought that was an interesting observation from Coach Zimmer. Coach Zimmer also said they're better run blockers than pass protectors. I thought that was very candid of Coach. But that those guys won't be quick missers, meaning they won't give up easy sacks, which we saw some of last year. Also, Coach Zimmer admitted it's not a good draft for tackles, so we signed two in free agency. That alleviates some pressure from having to address that position early in the draft. The second clip, Coach Zimmer talking about the running game.
I believe that we have to, obviously we've got to run the ball a lot better. So we've got to run the football. I do think Sam throws the ball great, so I'm not afraid to move us back into the gun and things like that, but with our running game, we've got to be good at play action pass, and so we've got to develop that part of it. We weren't very good in the red zone. You know, one of the studies that we did is on both sides of the ball, if a team converts a third down conversion inside the red zone, they usually score touchdowns. You know, whether it's against us or for us, so we're going to work real hard on that area. Inside the 5-yard line, we're going to work real hard because we weren't on either side of the ball very good there. But I think if we can get the running game going, it will help the play action and it will help the balls go down the field.
Nate, I found this interesting. We all call it a passing league in the NFL.
That's what we call it.
But Coach Zimmer wants to improve on the running game.
I think, well, if you probably asked every coach, they would say that. Mm-hmm. But you look at stats from last year, there's a lot of room to improve in the running game. And you yep. know that a coach like Mike Zimmer, that's going to bug him quite a bit because, you know, the defensive coach, solid running game, those two things work together. And when one of those things isn't working so well, that has a negative effect on the others.
Yes.
So,
and to me, I think if I had to just guess, my guess is what bugged Zimmer the most about the running game / the offense last year was if you look at all the possessions we had that got inside the five, but we didn't score a touchdown. I think that maybe got at him a lot. And if you can improve the run game It will help you in the red zone. It will help you on the goal line. It will help your play action passing. It will help you get the ball down the field. So I thought that was interesting insight from Coach Zimmer. Third, Coach Zimmer talking about Sam Bradford as a leader.
With Sam, it was so much, he was just trying to get acclimated really to the whole situation. So Sam has a lot of leadership qualities. I mean, you know, the guy, besides being a heck of a quarterback, he's a scratch golfer. He was a great basketball player. You know, I don't think you ever are that kind of athlete that you don't get a lot of respect from the people around you and your team. But I think he'll be more of a leader this year because of, you know, all the things that went on last year too. I mean, he didn't know anybody. He probably didn't even know who I was when he walked in the door, you know.
More good insight from Zimmer here, pointing out that last year was a unique situation for Sam Bradford, joining a team 8 days in front of the season, and how hard that is, not just on the field, but how hard that is to get to know your coaches, get to know your teammates, get settled in with your wife or significant other or family or whoever, or buy a house or find a place to live, get directions on how to get to the facility and the stadium and the team hotel and all of that stuff that Sam was dealing with. So the fact that he dealt with all that and played as well as he did is remarkable. And if anyone wasn't impressed with his leadership abilities, you know, you also have to factor in, which, first of all, I was not unimpressed with his leadership abilities.
Right.
But you have to grant him the fact that he was dealing with a whole bunch of other stuff that quarterbacks normally don't have to deal with that may have taken away from his ability to fully engage as a leader. And Coach Zimmer is saying that now that he's in his second year and he's settled with this team and he feels secure with this team, that you may see more of that leadership come out of Sam Bradford. And I think Coach is also right that when you find guys, like, you know, we all have those guys or those friends or those people in our life who, like, they're just good at everything, you know, like they're good looking. They're good at basketball, they're good at football, they're good at chess, they're good at, you know, whatever. That they tend to be charismatic guys and good leaders, and people follow them and look up to them, and that's what he was kind of saying Sam is. You know, so I'm not worried at all about his leadership, but for those who are, I think that you'll see improvement in what you like to see in year two from Bradford. Lastly here, and maybe most interesting to me, not in terms of how important the issue is, but most interesting in terms of Coach Zimmer giving you honest insight into a situation. He's talking about comparing the struggles Cordarrelle had playing wide receiver to Laquan's slow start to his career last year.
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. I don't know if that answers it yet. I think Laquan has a better understanding of things. I don't think he understands quite some of the subtleties that he needs. You know what I mean? I think he's got the basics down pretty good.
And last year was just amazing. Just various injuries, I think.
A lot of injuries, you know, and then he got frustrated, and then he was pressing, and then, you know, I think he just has to come in and be an athlete. You know, sometimes even I was like, you know, you're trying to impress people so much, you start getting paralysis by analysis. You know, it's like, I gotta try harder, you know, it's really just, hey, just relax and do what you've been doing.
Is he a pretty smart kid?
Yeah, he's a pretty smart kid.
Nate, we've heard Coach Zimmer say a lot, Laquan's going to be good. He's going to be a good player. He's going to be fine. And, you know, that's fine to a point, but, you know, you like to hear reasoning behind it. You haven't always heard it, but here you did hear it. You know, pointing out things he was good at and things that he's not good at, and that he may have been pressing a little too much. And sometimes you press too much and you actually are going counter to your own interests. So I just thought that was interesting. And we probably should, you know, not give up on a first round pick after one season, right? That would probably be a bad idea.
Right, and a lot of it may sound like the same reasons and answers and things like that, but, you know, if you're asking the same questions in the off season when nothing's happening,
yeah,
you know, there's nothing to see to change really your how you perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it was awesome that Coach gave a little insight as to why he might have had the struggles. But really, these questions, even though he answered it here, are probably still going to be asked until Laquan's down in Mankato tearing it up at training camp and stuff like that. So
exactly right.
So we appreciate you, Coach Zimmer, expanding a little bit, but also we sympathize for you for probably answering the same question 100 times already this offseason.
And also, Coach Zimmer, thanks for listening to the Wobcast.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. For subscribing to it on iTunes or on your iPod or your iPhone, iPod app. Thank you, Coach Zimmer. And Marky and Corey Zimmer and Adam Zimmer. Thank you guys for listening.
Yes, everyone.
All right, position updates. Was thinking, Nate, in the weeks leading up to the draft, we take a look at each position group on the Vikings roster. We assess it. We take a look at what we have, what maybe we lost, or what we just gained, and let people draw their own conclusions on where we're at with that position as it relates to the draft. You cool with that?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Linebackers and wide receivers first. We'll begin with linebackers. Chad Greenway retires, so no more Chad.
Shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that's listened to the Wobcast the past few weeks.
Ray Maluaga becomes available from the Bengals. Of course, everyone ties him to us because Mike Zimmer coached Ray Maluaga in Cincinnati. Michael Kendricks is supposedly available via trade. He's currently under contract with the Eagles. Of course, everyone ties him to us.
Probably wants desperately to play with his brother.
Right, because of Eric Kendricks, his brother, who's on our team. So those are two names outside the building that have been tied to us quite a bit. I have not heard a lot of draft speculation in terms of linebackers being tied to us.
No, me neither.
Yeah, so that may come here in the next few weeks, but I think the thing that's easy to forget about the Vikings linebacker situation, because you have Barr and Kendricks and they're solid, a couple things to remember here. We have two guys who we love, and normally you're playing with two linebackers in today's NFL because you're in sub-package like 60-some percent of the time. You got three corners and two linebackers on the field. There were some games where Chad Greenway played like 10 or 15 or snaps or 20 snaps, you know, so I don't know how often you need three stud linebackers. Of course, if you have a third stud, that's great. But
Or a fourth
stud, that's great. But a lot of times you're only going to have two on the field. Now, if you get three really good ones, you can find a way, even in your sub packages, to play with three linebackers.
Right.
Especially with Anthony Barr's pass rushing ability. You know, you can line him up as a rusher. But if you look at the Vikings linebacker group right now, there are five on the roster. Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks, but then you have Kentrell Brothers, Emmanuel Lemur, and Edmund Robinson. And I think we forget that we have those three guys, Edmund Robinson, Kentrell Brothers, and Emmanuel Lemur. Those three guys are either in the prime of their career in Lemur's case, or they're still very young in Robinson and Brothers' case. And you owe it to yourself because you used resources to get them, and you owe it to those guys as players to give them a shot to come in here and win some playing time now that Greenway is gone. So before you go crazy and trade for Kendricks and sign Maluaga, let's look and see what these young pups have, you know, before we go crazy and try and get something else. So that's the deal on linebackers. Let's go to wide receivers. You have Cordarrelle Patterson and Charles Johnson gone. But Adam Thielen got a new contract. You, of course, have the Laquon Treadwell situation, him going into year two. And then Moritz Boehringer. And the thing we have to remember about Boehringer is he doesn't have a 0% chance to make it. Otherwise, he wouldn't be here. Mike Zimmer isn't going to roster me.
Right.
Right. Okay. I'm sure he can put up with me and it'd be a great story and whatever, but I have no shot to make the team. So he's not rostering me. So Moritz wouldn't be here if he had no chance. So he has a chance. But just remember, keep in perspective the learning curve and the curve physically for Moritz coming from where he was in Germany and the level of competition he faced there to where he is now. It's a huge difference and a huge curve, and he improved. He worked hard and improved last year, and so maybe he can continue to improve. But just because of the height, weight, speed thing and with all the hype around him last year, let's not assume that like he's taken over for Cordarrelle.
Right.
So and then I think the draft is going to be interesting to see if the Vikings do anything at receiver in the draft. With eight picks and with five in the first four rounds, a receiver could happen in there. Any receivers from Iowa we should go after, Nate?
No, probably
okay.
not.
No, none from Iowa? All right. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the draft with these receivers. a lot of fast ones at the combine. Speed was the name of the game at the combine this year. Under contract right now for the Vikings, there are 8 receivers. Bullringer, Diggs, Thielen, Treadwell, Jarius Wright under contract. Mitch Matthews, the Vikings just signed him this week. Caleb Jones, the Vikings signed him this offseason. And, of course, Isaac Frichty, who actually played in a game at the end of last season after being on the practice squad. Minnesota kid from Caledonia, Minnesota, and played for the Gophers. So usually you bring like 11 or 12 to camp, I believe. We have 8 right now. So very reasonable to think the Vikings will add multiple receivers yet here in the offseason. So that's the linebacker and wide receiver position updates for the Vikings with the draft about 5 weeks away.
Excellent work. I think you covered it pretty well.
I mean, that was, you guys.
Even guys that aren't on the team we talked about.
Right. Nate, producer Nate, has so many good ideas for the Wobcast. I have to come up with one every now and then. Position updates was my jam. I came up with that one.
I like it.
Okay. Oh, I think I said who we're going to do next week here. This is we call this a tease in the business. Running backs and defensive line position updates in next week's Wobcast.
So buckle up.
All right.
Let's finish up with some fan mail.
All right, let's do it.
The first question is from Joe. Joe asks, by pick 48, the best-ranked interior lineman will probably be gone, leaving the rest tagged as, quote, not worthy for the Vikings' first pick. So, should the Vikings pick a player who will help them score points, such as a player like Kupp? Or Kamara. Did I say those right?
Yeah. Okay. Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp.
I think he's like the Washington State receiver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kamara, the running back from Tennessee.
Alvin Kamara. We loved him at the combine. Fast riser, we called him.
So Joe presents those options and then says maybe go back to your O-line in the later rounds. What do you think of Joe's strategy?
Yeah. I get where Joe's coming from. And what he's doing is he's taking what people are saying at face value in terms of what they're saying about like how good the offensive linemen are this year. You know, and we heard Coach Zimmer say it himself. Like, this is not, you know, a great draft for offensive tackles, so that's why we signed 2 in free agency. So I get all of that. I just want to point out one thing. From last year's draft, do you know who the 48th pick was?
Not off the top of my head. No.
Jason Spriggs.
Oh,
offensive tackle from Indiana for the Packers.
We've seen him once or twice.
He played for Green Bay this season.
He did.
1-2 picks later, Nick Martin from the Houston Texans, who got hurt, but he was a guy that a lot of people, you know, had high opinions of. So
interesting.
Phil Lodeholt was a serviceable starter for us for a long time. In fact, there were several years where he was significantly better than serviceable. I mean,
right.
He was our starting right tackle as a rookie in 09, and we went to the NFC title game. So Phil Lodeholt was a second round pick. So, you know, I don't totally agree with Joe that it's a guarantee that all the good linemen are gone by pick 48, so don't even worry about offensive linemen there. I think if you have identified a couple of linemen that you like in the late first and middle parts of the second round, there's a chance those guys are going to be there. If you like Dan Feeney from Indiana, if you like Forrest Lamp, you know, there's Deion Dawkins, there's a center from LSU that a lot of people like, Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks have talked to us about him. So I wouldn't give up on O-line in the second round just because we signed 2 tackles and just because people say the class is no good. I think O-line is still a possibility at 48, but I think running back is a reasonable idea there. I think tight end is a reasonable idea there. And I think you never are doing it wrong if you give Mike Zimmer a good defensive player at 48. So I think the Vikings are very flexible still at 48. As much as they need offensive line improvement next year, I think they don't have to take one at 48.
One position, I won't say you can 100% rule out because it happened in the second round last year, but one position that we probably wouldn't take at pick number 48 would be kicker.
Right.
But
unlikely.
That's a good word for it, unlikely. Jim asks when we think the kicking situation would be resolved.
Well, Jim, I think you...
I'll say probably not at pick 48. That's probably not what it'll
definitely
be
not pick 48, I'm going to say, yeah. I mean, you have Kai Forbath, so I understand that you may not be overwhelmed by the fact that we have Kai Forbath, but let's remember he was 15-15 for us last year, including 5-5 from 40-plus, including 1-1 from 50-plus. So, you know, I think if the season started now and Kai was your kicker, I think you'd be okay with that. I'm not saying you don't bring in a guy to compete with him or you don't even draft a guy to compete with him, but So I'm not going to say the kicking situation is a stone cold lead pipe lock. It's going to be Kai Forbath. But I think that you're good enough at kicker to win games right now with Kai Forbath. He was perfect last year, 15 of 15 in seven games.
So, can't do much better than
right.
that.
Right, and he wasn't only kicking short field goals. As I said, he was 4 of 4 from 40-plus and 1 of 1 from 50-plus. So the sample size was good. He was very accurate last year. He's an 87% career field goal kicker. I think you're okay with Kai, but Mike Zimmer loves to make people compete for their jobs, so it would not shock us with 90-man rosters until the end of August if a kicker is on the roster. Two kickers are on the roster.
Finally, a question from Rick. He's asking about
Spielman?
No. Okay. Unless this is his pen name.
Okay. Meyer.
Rick Meyer.
All right.
Via Rick Spielman.
And not the Rick Meyer, like the former NFL quarterback Rick Meyer.
Oh.
Because that's
okay.
a different spelling.
Okay.
Sorry.
Also a good note.
I've interrupted you twice on
no,
the last question.
No, those are important things to realize. Yeah. So this Rick Meyer asks, I wonder if Darrell Revis might be a fit for the Vikings. I've read they might sign another veteran cornerback to play slot if Mackenzie Alexander isn't up to the task yet. Does Revis as a nickel cornerback make sense for the Vikings? I could see him wanting too much money, but what do you think, Wabi?
Yeah, Darrell Revis, by the way, has played out his career like brilliantly, I think.
Yeah.
Like he's basically a hired gun. He's a hired hitman. Like he's gone from team to team on like 1 and 2 year contracts and made a ton of money.
So much money.
Yeah. I mean, so bravo to Darrell Revis and his representatives for playing this the way they have, because not everyone can do it. Only a few guys can do it this way. He was one of them who could, and he totally did. Like, remember he played for Tampa Bay one time.
Yeah. I wouldn't have remembered that unless
for a lot
until
of money.
You brought it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Won a Super Bowl with Belichick, you know, and like, so, and has played for the Jets twice. So, I mean, like, really a cool
and he
way
might
to
not
do
be
it.
Done yet
and he might not be
he might go to the Vikings. I heard
we want another slot corner.
Yeah.
Coach Zimmer did say that Mac Alexander has a shot at this job, and what he does with the opportunity is up to him. He told the Voice of the Vikings and our buddy Paul Allen that on 9 to Noon. I thought that was a cool statement by Mike Zimmer, because you're putting the ball in Mac Alexander's court. And look, you knew that Captain Munderland's contract was up after 2016, and you know that Terrence Newman is in his upper 30s, and that you may be without both of those guys at any point in time beginning in 2016. And because you knew that, you drafted Trey Waynes in the first round in 2015, and you drafted Mac Alexander in the second round in 2016, because you knew that your two veterans may be gone. So this has been the plan. And so now it's up to Mac to execute the plan and be good and make the Vikings look good for taking him. And the Vikings, though, can guard against that failure by bringing in a veteran guy who can play slot. And Revis is an option. Terrence Newman is also an option. If Trey Waynes flourishes at outside corner, maybe you can slide Terrence inside. The thing, though, to remember about free agency and Darrell Revis is this is a two-way street. This is not the draft. Free agency is not the draft where you say, oh, I want that guy, and he has to come here. Revis has to want to play for you, and you have to want Revis. And I don't know if that is the situation between the team and Revis. And even if it is, you also have to agree on a contract, and you have to agree on playing time and where he's going to play. I mean, if the Vikings want him to play in the slot and Revis doesn't want anything to do with the slot, then he's not going to come here.
Yeah, probably so, wouldn't work out too well.
Yeah. It is a super scintillating idea, though.
It is.
Isn't it?
I mean, anytime a big-name free agent is out there, mostly because they never get out there. Like Alshon Jeffrey, that was a weird case.
Mm-hmm.
Normally teams lock guys like that up as long as they can. So, so anytime there's a big name out there, it's always fun to imagine them in purple.
And I think some people who are Jets followers might want to tell you that Darrell kind of dropped off last year a little bit, didn't have a great season. Mike Zimmer knows more about that than we will, so his evaluation is the one that matters. I also saw a report that Darrell played 20 pounds heavier than normal. It's uncomfortable to talk about playing weights and all that because we don't weigh the players the day they play. And there's more that goes into playing weights than, you know, we really realize. But this is, it's a scintillating idea because it's Mike Zimmer, the DB and defensive guru, and it's Darrell Revis, the best DB of our time probably, at least of the last 15 years. So I get the question where it's coming from. It seems like it's an unlikely union because there are so many factors that go into it. But we'll see. Honestly, As cool as it would be to see, I'd much rather have Mackenzie Alexander be the guy. Like, the Vikings are right on Mac Alexander. He's our nickel corner for the next 8 years. That would be the ideal.
I'm good with that
situation. So, all right.
I'm good with this Wobcast.
I am too. That's all, right?
I think that's all we have typed up. That's all you have typed up on this delightful outline.
When I'm listening to like other like radio shows and podcasts, I think it's cool when you hear paper.
I agree.
You know,
it makes it sound like we prepared.
Right. Congratulations to all of you still listening to the end of a podcast. That's quite an accomplishment to get to the end of one of these, and we thank you for doing that. And that's it for this edition of the Wobcast. We're done talking intelligently, and we're done messing around. We're going to go back and try and come up with more ideas for next week's edition of the Wobcast. So until then, and on behalf of producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, wishing you guys a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. So, yeah, I started with